Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
And welcome to Inside the Episode. Today, David and I are going inside Make Your Success Real. Super excited about this conversation. First of all, David, thanks for a great episode. I mean, as always, I start off that way every time. But this one in particular was really good because I love how you brought the reality into the situation. We have to begin really for success to manifest in our life. You have to begin from a place of reality. So when you said real, I just kind of wanted to start the baseline here about what does that look like when you say make it real in your mind? Because clearly if you're thinking about something, it's not real yet, but you have to believe that it's real before you even start. Yeah. So can you just kind of set the baseline for us there?
Well, why would somebody go after something that they don't believe is real? You know, I remember really having this doubt when I was younger. Like, can I really do this? Could I be wealthy? Is that real? Like, is that actually really real? And I see it with, I've been doing this for a long time, so I see it with so many people. They don't believe the thing that they want to be, do, or have is actually real in the sense that they can do it. They know it's real for somebody else.
Yeah,
right?
Well, they can do it, but I can't.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. But they don't think it's real for themselves. So I remember, and I brought God Works through Faith because I've been teaching another group of people out of this book. So I want to do a few lessons out of here. But this lesson in particular is interesting because think about an animal. An animal, well, think about a beaver, right?
Sure.
Beavers don't go to beaver school to learn how to build a beaver dam, right? A bird doesn't go to a nest school to learn how to build a nest. And some of those nests are like crazy intricate how they do it, right? How do they know they can do it?
It's in them.
It's already in them. It's already in us too.
That's
but here's the difference. It's never questioned to
begin
with.
Yeah, they don't think about it.
It's never questioned.
They just do it.
They just do it.
Not questioned.
They just do it. So that, you know, that part of the human mind where we question, that, which is also like a great gift because our intellect gives us the ability to ration, realize, you know, look at both sides of something. But when we get programmed where we're only looking at one side, when something becomes not real, like if I tell you as a little boy, like, Brandon, you're a piece of shit. You know, you're a dick. You're never going to do anything. You're stupid,
sure.
Right? I'm your second grade school teacher. You're stupid. How stupid could you possibly be? That starts to become the foundation of how you see yourself. So when you look at something outside of yourself that you would love to be like, oh, that's so damn cool. I couldn't do that. It's not real.
It's almost immediate too.
Like
the second you thought, oh, that would be so cool. But then you go into justifying there's no way you could ever do it.
Right. 100%.
Man. And is that like environment? Is that those words have very strong power over us, especially if you heard them early on. Is that like an environmental thing? Like I'm thinking about the people I grew up with.
Is what part environmental?
Is the you defaulting to I couldn't do it?
Well, it's environmental based on, did you hear that in your environment as a kid?
Right.
Right. Was it mom and dad, somebody?
Well, community related too. Like not too many people break out of this community. You know, I think about like the blue collar where we grew up, it was really rough and tumbled and hard. And I'm not saying that people didn't get out, but there were some people who have stayed there their whole life because, oh, I couldn't do that. Like I really wanted to do this thing, but I couldn't do that.
Right.
I couldn't do that. And then, so they go work in the mine or work in the mill or whatever it might be. Yeah. That's why I think I brought up environmental pieces.
Yeah, it is. It's 100% environmental.
Yeah, for sure. Interesting. My first elementary school was called Beaver Dam School. So if there is a school for beavers, Beaver Dam Elementary might have been
it. Yeah, but I bet you don't remember how to build a beaver dam.
I do not. Yeah. I used to walk to Beaver Dam, but I do not know how to build one. But let's stick with that because you use animal analogies quite often. And I know there's people out there who are like, well, yeah, David, but a beaver doesn't have higher levels of thinking or a squirrel just knows how to be a squirrel. Like how do you, I don't want to say defend, maybe that's not the right word, but when you bring in these animal analogies and people out there say, well, that's ridiculous because that's just an animal. How do you rebut that and sort of be like, look, this is what it is.
So here's the thing. Our DNA is one thing. Like our DNA works the same as the DNA in a squirrel or a rabbit or whatever. It builds the body. Now, I think you could look at the DNA and say that the DNA has the intelligence to build the body. But for some reason, that doesn't seem to cross over. But here's what I do think, what I do think crosses over. The intelligence to build the dam and the desire to build the dam and the instinct to build the dam is already in the beaver.
Sure.
It's not taught how to do that. It's there. It's there. You have to admit that if a beaver is going to build a dam, there's an intelligence that has to do that. It has to know what it's doing. Now, it's not the same intellect, at least to our understanding, it's not the same intellect like we have, where we could do something, but we don't have the ability to step back and analyze what it is that we're doing. We don't know that an animal has that ability to any degree.
The analytical mind.
Correct. Yeah. So it knows that it's doing it, but it doesn't know that it know that it's doing it, right?
Sure.
But it's still doing it.
Yeah.
Now, human beings, whether you believe that we came here from God or you believe that we came here, you know, through evolution, we're still an animal.
This is true.
But why are human beings the only animal that can't seem to have any direction in life? Right? It doesn't make any sense. There's a piece of something missing here. It seriously is missing from what it is that we teach kids, what we teach any human being, right? There is a part of us that already knows what to do. There is a part of us that already knows what direction we're supposed to take in life. Our problem is that we get so much contradiction as in our youth that when I feel a desire to do something, it just doesn't make any damn sense because I have all this information that says I can't be, do, or have that for whatever reason. Like, there's a million different ideas around that because people are raised differently.
Sure.
But if you teach it from a religious aspect, if you teach it from a moral aspect, if you teach it from a dysfunctional aspect, which is like you have dysfunctional parents and they just tell you you're a piece of shit or you were abused as a kid or whatever, regardless of where it comes from, it goes in and becomes the foundation of how we think about ourselves. So it's so relevant because we hear it so often. And of course, we then make the mistakes that kind of back that up. So we have our own evidence.
Yeah, we confirm
of it.
Validate. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
When I am confronted with a secret desire to be, do, or have something versus what's going on in my head that's absolutely real to me all my life, rarely does the desire win out. But the desire is that infinite intelligence in us that's the same as in the animal kingdom that's saying, you could be this.
Yes.
You could be it, right? A person will see a celebrity or a musician or an artist or a construction worker or a brain surgeon. And something in it turns us on. Something turns on inside of us and we're like, oh my God, that is so amazing. That is so cool. I would love to do that. I don't have the verification inside. Animals don't tell their offspring that they can't do something. Animals don't have peer groups that go, you can't be, do, or have this, right? Think about how magnificent this intelligence is. You look at like flocks of birds, you know, like when starlings migrate and there's millions of them and you're watching them do this dance through the air. Like their whole thing is turning at the same time. They're not running into each other and knocking each other out of the sky. It's like this.
It's a beautiful dance.
Right. It's the same thing with schools of fish. Boom, boom. All at the same time. There's an internal intelligence that's guiding this from an instinctual place. I believe human beings have the same thing, but we're not taught how to source it, how to pay attention to it, and it starts with desire. So the desire is the vibrational verification, the awareness, the intellect also kicks in here, that we're one with this thing that we want to be, do, or have in our life. And then we need to learn to follow it.
Yeah, that's great. A couple things that were running through my head as you were going through that, which was said so well said, and I've always been fascinated how you bring in the animal kingdom into this. The big word that jumped out at me was instinct, like they have an instinctual movement. And then you said sort of like we analyze things too much. We paralysis by analysis kept playing over and over in right. my head. You don't see the butterfly that's migrating to Mexico thinking about, oh, I don't know if I can do it this year, or the salmon heading upstream to spawn. I think I'm going to sit this one out, fellas. They just go. It's it's time to go. And even migrating whales, they take these 1,000-mile trips to go back to the breeding ground. It's insane. So they're driven by desire, and it's that awareness that humans have that if we suppress that desire, chances are it's going to be easier to suppress it the next time.
Elephants in Africa, there'll be a drought, right? And they'll walk hundreds of miles to the next watering hole, never have been there before.
That's crazy.
Like, what is guiding this?
Yeah.
Right? Well, we know. I mean, we know. If there is an intelligence that we just do not understand. We call it instinct, right?
Sure.
I think that glosses over, kind of puts a candy coat on it. But the truth is that there is a significant intelligence that's going on underneath the surface here that guides all of nature to do what it does. And it's same with human beings.
Sure.
But nobody's teaching anybody how to follow it, you know? And here's the thing. It's not difficult to follow once you get in touch with yourself. Because once you start to know who you are and what you really want, it'll take you where you want to go every time. And it's not that difficult. The difficulty is separating in our mind that voice that says that we can't and making the thing that we want real. Really understanding that desire, that thing that really turns me the fuck on, right? That's real. That is something that's real. And it doesn't matter what the statistics are, and it doesn't matter how much money a person has or doesn't have. If I follow that with the passion that goes with it, I'm going to manifest it in my life.
Sure.
Period.
So you talk about like teaching that more. We don't teach that enough in schools or, you know, in our,
right.
I don't know, maybe religion. Where else can we begin to teach that? Does it start in the home? How do we expand that out into a school environment? Like, how do we start to teach follow your desire without bringing in the safety and security that most people will inevitably do?
Well, see, now I don't think that that's really that big of an issue either, because animals also teach their young how to be safe. Right? Almost ever, unless you're at the top of the fucking food chain,
sure.
Animals have predators and they guide and they teach that animal how to be safe. You know, if you watch, like nature or animal shows or whatever, whenever they're doing one where there's a mom and a baby, you'll see like if the baby starts to go off by itself or whatever, that mom will get in there and like, let's go.
I see this every day on my run. I see this every day on my run in real time. There are so many fawns in our neighborhood right now, and the mothers immediately get in between me. Well, I have a dog with me too. So they see that dog coming. They immediately get in between and they'll look at me. And the fawn, I saw a fawn like suckling from her mom as the mom was staring directly at us and got in the middle of us so as to protect her young while the youngling was sort of seeing it. So I see that in real time every day.
Yeah. And that's also an awareness thing. So the mom has the awareness of that, but the fawn doesn't yet.
Correct.
Right? So I don't know how that kicks in or what is it learned or what, but it's an instinctual thing that's going on here. It's a different intelligence. Now, with human beings, where do we start teaching it? Here's the problem. Most people don't know this. Like, you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that really understands this. It really requires a significant amount of study, separating our mind, the idea of truth, between that and superstition, like whatever the superstitions are that a person's raised with, separating that from what the world says you have to be, do, or have, or what you can't be, do, or have, and then really getting in touch with yourself, which takes maturity. I mean, you know as well as I do, the things that are important to you today, they weren't important to you 10 years ago.
Totally.
Right? I think if human beings started to understand this, they would teach it to their kids, but we don't understand it. And it's very obvious today that we don't understand it. Like,
yeah.
We have so many people that are fucking lost.
Totally.
There.
And I feel like a lot of people out there, like I think about like the generational, like I became a lawyer because my dad was a lawyer, you know, that type of generational thinking, it's almost as if it's reckless to follow your desires. It's reckless to follow your dreams.
That's what they have you think.
That's what they have you think because they don't understand it. And I understand that in uncertainty, there is a little bit of, I'm a little afraid of this, so I'm going to go with the secure and safe path. But what we're trying to get people to realize that if you have a desire and you follow it, and this is perfect for your teaching, when you follow it, if you commit to that thing and put in the work behind that thing, you're going to achieve that thing because your passion's in the right place. How does someone differentiate that between bright, shiny object syndrome or ping-ponging. Like, I thought this was the thing I wanted, and then all of a sudden, I don't want to do that anymore. It looks like too much work. Ooh, here comes another thing. Squirrel, I'm going to go over this way. So what is the differentiation between desire and just bright, shiny object?
The desire is the fulfillment that you feel in your heart or your soul when you do the thing that you originally wanted to do, right? So it's when a person is stepping into the reason that they're here, the reason that they're in this lifetime, there's a fulfillment that comes from being, doing, or having that nothing else is the same. Nothing else is the same. It's funny because you'll hear people talk about this in a very interesting way. So it kind of tells you what they're trying to link it to in their mind. When a person loves what they do, a lot of times they'll say, oh, it's better than sex, right? Like, I would really, you know, it's in the sense that, like, sex, the orgasm is one of the highest or best
creation
human
energy.
Yeah,
mega.
Well, it's the most pleasurable.
Yeah, for
thing,
sure.
Right?
For sure.
They're trying to tell you that when I'm doing the thing that I'm put here to do, whatever that might be, that pleasure is the equivalent of, if not better, than the human orgasm.
Sure.
So there's something to be said for that, because if you look at sex as an urge, a human urge, we get turned on. We have an urge to copulate, right? And it's a very strong urge. I mean, obviously, 8 billion people on the planet, it's a strong urge, right?
Yeah, we're doing pretty good in that department.
Yeah. So if you look at how nature is designed, that urge is designed not so much for the feeling of the orgasm, but to seek that feeling so that we will continue to populate, right?
Sure.
And apparently it's the same with most all life, right? What would be the reason that we would feel so fulfilled in our soul when we do something that we were put here to do? I think the reason is twofold. One, so that we do it, and whatever that doing of it is adds to mankind, right? All of the things that people are here to do are also in service to other people.
Correct.
In some way. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing. So you spend your day basically in heaven on earth doing what you do. You love to do it. It doesn't tire you. It doesn't wear you down. It doesn't frustrate you. You wake up in the morning and you look forward to it. And in the doing of that, you continue to do something that adds to the world, right?
Yeah, oh, totally.
But we don't look at it that way. We look at it like, we got to get a job. You know, you got to get a job. I don't care what the job is. You got to get a job, and you got to be a man. You got to be a woman. You got to hold, you know, you got to hold your own. We don't have the luxury of, well, you get to find out what you love to do in life, you know?
Sure. I would just be amazed at how many people who are listening to this podcast, and even how many people out there in the world right now who are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. I'm sure if
they
ran,
almost everybody.
Oh yeah. I mean, the statistics must be in the high 90th percentile as far as people who they wanted to be this one thing, but they chose this other thing. And now they live with regret much of their life, but they're not going to do anything because they're 5 years away from their 401k, or it's too late to make a pivot, which is bullshit, because you've had, you know, 70 and 80 year olds in your audiences who have made a pivot in their life and have gone on to be very successful in another thing. Yeah. After retirement. So that's just an excuse that people make, but it would be shocking to see the data on something like that. How many people are just unhappy, but not willing to make a change.
But it's an excuse because it's not real to them.
It's the real again.
It's not real.
Sure.
You know, if it was real, right? Like, if somebody said to you, Brandon, I've got a check for you for $10 million. It's in Kenya. I need you to get on a plane this afternoon and come. The only way you would even consider it is if you knew that it was real, and then you'd be hard pressed to believe that it was real.
Sure. Yeah.
Right?
I immediately, when you said that, I was like, at first I was like really excited when you said that. I'm like, okay, let's go. And then I thought, no, this isn't safe. Somebody's trapping me. Somebody's selling me off. They're going to harvest my organs. Like, all these things came into my head within a second of that scenario
that you
just presented.
There you go. But if you knew it was real, you would do it. I see people that they won't do things to better themselves, but if you were to flip that scenario and do the same thing, like, I'll give you a $10 million check if you do these things, they would do it in a second if they knew that it was real.
Right.
Right. Now, yes, I understand that it's money and that it's $10 million and there's all that behind it. But if you didn't think it was real, you wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't shoot for it.
You wouldn't do it.
And the reality is there's $10 million in your life right now. I mean, it's
100%.
And they just aren't willing. I think the reason I brought up bright, shiny objects a little bit is because I know that there's people out there who get really ramped up and excited about a thing and they go towards that thing and they're really gung-ho, but there's something, their internal, you know, I don't know, instinct or whatever, something stops them. So what is that stopping point? I guess it's unique to each person, but something is stopping them from seeing it through to fruition.
Well, with bright, shiny object, a lot of it is the fulfillment of something else. So when we have these issues in life, very often our self-esteem is damaged.
Totally.
And we're looking to fulfill something there that we need to learn to give to ourselves, but we haven't learned that. And then we'll see things, and it's, I don't even know that we intellectually think this, not in most cases, but some way we interpret that's going to allow me to fulfill that. I heard somebody say one time, it wasn't that long ago, they were talking about when somebody is seeking to be a celebrity versus be a proficient actor or actress, right? Right. Yeah. They're looking to be a celebrity because they're trying to fill a hole inside them. They want appreciation. They want love. They want recognition. They probably didn't get it as a child. The person that wants to be an actor is actually looking at the fact that they love to act. They love the skill set. They love learning that. They love doing it and growing it. Both places, right, can have very similar outcomes as far as being seen by a lot of people. But the motivation's very different. The motivation to be seen by a lot of people is not a healthy motivation. There's absolutely nothing healthy about it. There's nothing that's beneficial about that at all. To do it because it's secondary to another purpose, that's different, right?
Sure.
But not as a primary motivator.
Yeah, no, that's great. I was thinking, as you were going through that, I was thinking about kids, you know, parents out there who are listening and they have children, and it's very easy to get into a default way of thinking around desire. Like one thing that I think I've really pivoted on, especially now that I've got kids, I've got a senior in high school and one who is already in college. It would have been so easy to steer my daughter away from art school, who's now in her sophomore year, just because of whatever it might be, cost or distance or whatever it might be, or you're going to be a starving artist. Like these were things that played out in my head. And even my youngest daughter, who's now a senior in high school, who has plans to go to college next year, she has a vision of wanting to own a pottery studio. So she's going to go to school into business to eventually maybe do that. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. But there was a part of me early on when she said that, my default in my head, I did not say this out loud, but default in my head was, you're not going to be able to make a living from that. But I didn't say it out loud because I had to sit on it for a minute because my programming was, you need to go to school, get your degree and go do that thing. And even if you don't like it, you're getting paid every month, you're getting you're getting vacation time, you get benefits as a teacher, all these other sorts of things. And I sat on that. And the more I think about it, the more I think it's pure genius that that's what she's wanting to do because that is her calling. That's what she feels.
Oh, totally.
And I love that for her. And I love that Steph and I are woke enough to be able to say, hey, follow your dreams. Live your dreams because that's the desire she's being pulled. It might change in 2 years because again, maturity wise, 17 years old, it might change, but at least you're not doing anything to stifle it. I think about all the people who were told they couldn't do that thing because it's just not smart to do that.
Right.
And they stifled it for years and years and years. And that's sad to me. Like I like to believe that what I'm doing, and this wasn't what I set out to do, sitting across from this brilliant man, having a conversation about the universal laws and when things are real versus when things are not. But it got me here because I took a chance and I laid the foundation for that. And of course, my lovely wife did much of the same and she drove the train for most part, but I still had to say yes at some point in time. There's a lot of people out there who just, they want to do it. They're just scared shitless to do it. And it boils down to that safety and security thing. I feel like we talk about that a lot on this show.
Well, you got to know, I didn't set out to do it either.
Yeah.
My whole idea was, can I make enough money to support my family?
Right.
You know, I was the furthest away from something like this that you could possibly be. But it came by saying yes.
Exactly.
Every time I did something and I saw that it worked, I started to think to myself, shit, if I understood what I was doing, what could I do? Like, I might actually, it might be possible for me to actually really make something of my life if I understood what the hell I was doing. How am I having these successes, these little, you know, blips of success that started to come out of nowhere? Because, Brandon, I was failing my ass off. And then it was like somebody drew a line in the sand, boom, and now I'm succeeding. And then it became, I've got to figure that out. But that little flip in my attitude made everything real. That's what happened. It became real. Opportunity to actually triple my income became real. It was a fantasy the day before. It was a fucking fantasy in my mind.
Can you repeat those three things that you lived by again for the audience? Because that, I think, in a nutshell, is everything that is so right about your story and what allowed you to do what you're doing today.
I decided that I was going to act like I love what I did, do every job to the best of my ability, and treat everybody with total respect.
I mean, that just sounds like being a good person. Yeah. If you're a good person and follow those things, you can make anything out of your life that you want.
Yeah. The difference is that I stepped into the consciousness of it. I was actually paying attention. Am I actually doing this? Am I actually acting like I love what I do? Am I actually treating these people with respect? Am I actually doing a good job? I can't tell you how many times, and I've told you this story before, I was loading trucks with food. I worked for a food distributor. So the way that the pallets is what they stack the food on, and then they're like shrink wrapped, okay? But they're loaded in the truck from front to back based on the store delivery, right? So the first store that they go to gets loaded on last in the back of the truck. Now you may be stopping at a 7-Eleven and they're getting 20 bags of potato chips and some ho-hos or something. And that's all that's on this pallet. And the next store is like a major supermarket and they're getting 20 cases of Evian water. So you've got ho-hos and chips here and you've got Evian water here, right? This one's this high. This one goes almost to the top of the trailer, okay? Now, you stack that Evian water this high. I don't care how well it's shrink-wrapped. When that truck turns a corner,
it's going over.
The weight's going to distribute, and it's going to come over, and it's going to crush this stuff.
Correct.
Right? So prior to me deciding that I was going to do my best, yet on the dock, there's also the pressure to get these trucks loaded because it's coming down. So we have this huge warehouse. Right? We have men up in we call them pickers. And they worked up in these rafter things where all the food was stored. And they would put it, it would come down on conveyors, and then it would get stacked onto the pallet. It would get shrink wrapped. That would come out on a belt. We would pick it up, and then we have this manifest that would tell us what trucks to load it on. You didn't have time to let these things get backed up because it shut the whole damn warehouse down, right? So as we're doing this, there's a pressure to keep that going. There was no time to screw around. When you would put a load in the truck where you had an Evian water that was high and the potato chips were low, you had to do something called bracing. So you would take a pallet, you would put one pallet this way against the Evian water, one pallet this way across the top, and then a pallet that would go like kitty corner like this, mm-hmm. and it would brace it, right? Sometimes you'd have to even have one more over on the side here. So that if it came, it wouldn't tip it over. It was a complete brace. Well, pallets are all different kinds of qualities. Some are junk, you know, whatever. I did not always care how well it was braced. I just didn't. And I was constantly being written up for driver turned the corner, fell over, crushed the order. They couldn't deliver the order that day. So when I decided I was going to do everything to the best of my ability, sometimes I would be backing out of the trailer on my forklift and my mind is going, you didn't brace that right. Go back and fix it. And I've got people screaming, get these goddamn pallets off the belt. You're shutting the damn place down. I would pull back up. I would get off the forklift. I would go brace it correctly, and I would get back on and pull out. So that was the difference. Before that, I'd be like, fuck it. I don't care. It's the driver's problem. Yeah. How do I care?
And what's interesting about that whole analogy, I mean, we could look at that as an analogy too. You got people behind you who are yelling at you to just half-ass it and just hurry up because we don't want to get shut down. But yet you, in your own mind, want to make sure that it's perfect or as close to perfect as can be because you wanted to do things better. I think that is a way to look at life as well.
Like, it is. Well, it caused me to start seeing things differently. Yeah. I was not looking at anything from those perspectives. And that's what allowed me to recognize opportunity.
I love that.
And then it became real. Sure. So that was the first semblance for me that success could be a real thing in my life. And it took time. It took time. It took saying yes. It took evaluation. It took learning. And it built. It built over a period of years. And then it was just like, okay, this is the deal. This is really it.
Yeah, I don't think it's like it's premature or naive to say you're only going to have to do it once. I mean, you're gonna prove to yourself that something real, but then, you know, your brain is going to want to go back to the original default thinking, so you're going to have to prove it to yourself again and again and again. I made that one sale yesterday. Great. Make another one today and make two more tomorrow. Yeah. Like, make it real every day.
From the forklift experience to when I started this company was 7 years.
Yeah.
And that was 7 years of learning and growing and getting better consistently for 7 years. It was 7 years.
Yeah.
And then even when I did it, I really questioned as to whether I was ready or not. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So every step of the way made it more real. So that's the deal.
Yeah. I mean, I would encourage people to go back and listen to episode 78, 7 years of study. David talks about it a lot on this show. It did not happen overnight for him, but the foundation was being laid every single day you woke up, especially with those big three that you shared with us. So I absolutely love this episode. I thought it was great. The conversation afterward was better. I think everybody's going to go out and do some amazing things in this world based off what you said here today. So we appreciate that. And thanks for coming inside.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.